All three of them.
Many of them think I am. He's ready. We're going to open, call to order the meeting in the Senate Committee on Rural Communities and Economic Development today, the 14th of May. And we are going out of a little different order since we have the illustrious and outstanding representative from the Central Oregon here with us. So we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3109A. And we'll have a short explanation by our administrator while Representative Wisnik comes up to the podium.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3109A has no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact. It requires the director of the Oregon Health Authority and the state forester to submit a report regarding the impacts of the 2012 Polk Creek wildfire on public health, fish and wildlife, and aquatic habitat to the Legislative Assembly no later than February 10th, 2014.
You want the ODF to come up as well, or do you?
That'd be great.
Sure.
Well, and public health.
Okay. Yeah, come on up. Yes, we have three.
All right.
I knew you were a gracious person, so I thought you could probably
wish to have that. So.
Mr. Chair, I don't know where to begin. Thank you for those compliments.
Yeah, exactly.
I just want the bill passed. Chair Roland, thank you very much. For the record, I'm Gene Wisnett, State Representative, House District 53, and thank you and your honorable colleagues for hearing this this bill this afternoon. And joined at the table today by two of the state agencies who I really respect because they looked at this and did say we'll do this within our hide because we think it's a good thing to ask, so there's no financial impact. Mr. Chair, on September the 9th, 2012, the Pole Creek Forest wildfire broke out in Deschutes National Forest. The Pole Creek fire began sending smoke into Central Oregon communities on September the 11th, 2012. The town of Sisters was severely impacted by smoke, which quickly reached very unhealthy and hazardous air quality levels. Smoke went into Central Oregon and continued through October the 12th, 2012. This was a statement that was issued by the DEQ director, and you have I gave you a handout showing the DEQ monitoring equipment of how bad the health was in the Sisters area. And most significantly, their monitoring equipment registered the air quality in Sisters at very unhealthy or hazardous level for 5 days, when it really peaks in that area. So based upon the press reports every day in the bulletin we were getting, map showing the air quality in Central Oregon. I requested data from public health situation in Central Oregon. I requested first from public health from Deschutes County and then state public health and also DEQ. Next, because we've had too many fires in Central Oregon, as the chair knows, and both senators at the committee too. But I requested the Oregon Department of Forestry look at this bill and talk to them about how, from the wildfires we have, the forest wildfires, that we've never really looked at the impact on wildlife and the fish and the fish habitat. So here's an example. We're going to use this pole fire wildfire and see if we could get that data. I'm joined in sponsorship on this bill. I just saw him in the hall. He had a commitment, but Representative Brian Witt also as a co-sponsor of this bill. We had drafted it, accepted inputs from the Department of Public Health and Forestry, and their inputs are reflected in the amendments. They'll tell you this, but I hope that they'll tell you they support the bill. And they think the intent of the bill is good to increase public awareness of the impact of our forest wildfires. So appreciate the committee's working the bill, hearing the bill, and working the bill and passing it on. And I'll let you hear from the experts, and then I'll stay available to you.
Okay. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Roble, members of the committee. I'm Nancy Hurst, Chief of Fire Protection for Oregon Department of Forestry. Appreciate having the opportunity to provide testimony in support of House Bill 3109 with the amendments in front of you. As Representative Wisnett mentioned, both Deputy State Forester Paul Bell and myself had the opportunity to visit with him And essentially, the result is the bill that's in front of you today. The bill seeks to increase public awareness of the impacts of wildfires, specifically the 2012 Pole Creek Fire. Increasing public awareness on the impact of impacts of wildfire is something our department does on a regular basis through education and outreach with the public, with an eye towards really preventing wildfires. This report would enhance our communication to the public. Our department appreciates the timing of this report to allow for the coordination and preparation of the report in light of the current focus being on the current 2013 fire season that is already underway. With that, we urge your support of the bill and happy to address any questions you might have.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Jay Douglas. I'm the administrator for the Center for Prevention and Health Promotion in the Oregon Health Authority. I'm here to provide information relevant to to this bill. Last year, wildfires burned a near record 9.1 million acres in the United States. Oregon alone accounted for 1.2 million of those acres, nearly four times the 10-year average for our state. Unfortunately, conditions are worsening. Fire season now lasts about 2 months longer than it has in the past, and snowpack disappearing more rapidly are causing more red flag days in which winds and temperatures are high and humidity low. Forest fires can impact human health in many ways. Besides directly threatening homes, schools, workplaces, forest fires contribute to air pollution, which can exacerbate respiratory problems such as asthma, emphysema, bronchitis, and endanger individuals with chronic heart disease. Children and elderly are especially vulnerable as people with pre-existing conditions are. Forest fires can cause contamination of drinking water sources, disrupt essential services, and impair visibility for road and air traffic. This bill requires the Oregon Health Authority to investigate and report on a range of human health and environmental impacts related to forest fires, including the public's health. The technical and scientific experts in the Oregon Health Authority are well suited to producing an in-depth report characterizing these impacts and giving our experience performing research and providing risk reduction support to Oregonians. In addition, we have longstanding collaborative relationships with colleagues in the Department of Environmental Quality, Fish and Wildlife, and Forestry. Through our work in emergency preparedness also and climate and health adaptation planning, we have collaborative relationships with county health departments, in particular those serving communities impacted by wildfire. The report that's requested will provide a much-needed basis for informing mitigation efforts across the state, both in the short term and long term. In addition, it will offer the opportunity for the Oregon Health Authority and partner agencies to improve our collective responsiveness to threats to public health, wildlife, and river habitat. Thank you for the opportunity to testify this afternoon. I'm here to answer questions.
Senator Prezansky.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, from the testimony, I understand there's an amendment. I've went up on OLIS. I'm assuming we're talking about the Dash 3 amendment?
What you have in front of the gross now is the amendment that came from after me, Mr. Chair, and Senator Prezansky.
I don't think there's any new amendment.
Okay, so it's incorporated in the bill. That was probably what became
the amendment. The amendment we accepted was so there would be no financial impact and the willingness of both agencies to help us with this.
So if I could, Mr. Chair.
Yes, please.
So looking at that amendment, which I'm assuming is now part of the bill, it says that the report is to come to us, the Legislative Assembly, no later than February 10th of 2014.
Correct.
So the question I have is the goal of the report to get it before the legislature so we could actually potentially take action during the February session?
Mr. Chair and Senator, yes, sir, that was the intent. I asked it before to be submitted before, but the agencies asked for that time, additional time to prepare the report.
I can follow up. Sure. Representative, I think you and I are thinking in the same arena. If we get something on the 14th or even on the 1st of February, we will not more than likely be able to actually vet it and get it out in 28 days. Because that's normally what we do is the month of February, even though we have 35 days. So it seems to me that if we're really seriously wanting to be able to have potential action during the February session, we got to have it I think mid-January is late. I mean, what we did on another one, Mr. Chair, as you remember, was the end of the year. December 31st is what I would recommend, so we can actually be able to do it and maybe even get a report back to this committee during the last of the interim meetings, which is in December, at least kind of giving us a heads up if there's something we're going to try to act on, because we just aren't going to have enough time to turn it around.
Chair Robin, Senator, I completely agree with you. I defer to my colleagues as far as I didn't want a financial impact, and that was the date we came up. I think that if they work hard and we get it early enough, that we could still work together and get something submitted for the session, but I don't want to force anything on the agencies that...
Mr. Chair, in the answer that you're going to give, Jay, I guess the question for me is what would too much make difference as to having a cost impact if it's already within this first year of the biennium?
Mr. Chair, Senator Pozanski, I think we can probably manage to have it to you by the end of the year.
Okay. I don't know if we need to change that, but we'll put it on the record that we expect it back. I agree.
Nancy.
And Chair Roble, members of the committee, I would agree that whether it's the December interim or, you know, January, that we'll have the capacity to do and get that in front of prior to the February date.
And I actually, because of the way the bill is written, I actually do believe this is more about education than it is about a bill, because we may not, there may not be anything we can do with regard to legislation, but having the opportunity both in before the session and during the session to actually have a hearing about this so that people understand what these impacts are is going to be really important. And I guess my concern is that we are now a year almost, not quite. I guess it's only been about 8 months. So most of the impacts, or many of the impacts, may have already, some of them may have happened. So I think we did the air quality, so we know what was there. Did we do a testing on what was in that? What were the particulate sizes? What were the mercury content? What was the lead content? All of the other kinds of chemicals that, and heavy metals are, when you have a big forest fire, they produce a lot of stuff. Some of it is directly related to the asthma that you were talking about, and you can go, we can check that because we can see what records were there. But we don't know the unintended consequences, the long-term effects of exposure to mercury, exposure to lead, those kinds of things. We probably aren't going to get that. Is that my expectation, or do you think you're going to have that kind of data?
Mr. Chair, I don't think that we have a mechanism at this point to go back and analyze the air quality. We have data on the particulate levels and the information about the hospitalization rate, so we can look at it from that standpoint. I would have to check with my colleagues at DEQ as to see what other kind of air sampling was done and what we might be able to use from that.
Because I know that when we talked the Biscuit Fire, we had a lot of conversations about how much mercury that forest fire put into the air as a heavy metal, because there's a lot of mercury in the trees. It gets airborne, and all of a sudden it's in the air. We breathe it in, it causes problems. So there's a lot of other long-term effects of forest fires that I don't think we've studied much, and I would hope that over time we start having conversations about some of that as well. Mm-hmm. And then we've had the first rain, because after this took place would have been the big rain season. So a lot of the stuff got washed into the... Did we do any water quality testing at that time in the Forest Service with regard to the runoff and then loss of topsoil and other kinds of stuff due to the fire?
Yeah, Chair Roblin, we have not yet made specific contact with the Forest Service to determine exactly what information they will have available that existed either during the fire and or post-fire, but that's exactly who we'll be working with to gather what information is available.
Did this fire stay completely on Forest Service land?
Chair Roblin, yes, it did. It threatened private land significantly to the north and all along the eastern border for many, many days, and we were actively engaged from day one on that fire.
Okay. Other questions? Because I'm actually really happy about the bill. I think it's the kind of information we need to get more of, because I think we hear from time to time that it's, you know, the positive impacts of fire in the environment. I think we have less conversations about the negative impacts, and we know how much impacts we were told field burning had here. Same idea. I mean, we're burning stuff up. We got particulate matter, but what in that conversation, one of the things that we heard was that because of the particular kind of fires were happening, there were a particular particulate size that created more problems than others. And I don't know what we could find out about that with respect to forest fires.
Chair Roblin, I know your background, sister's school, we were really concerned. They were talking about gas mask, and but also talking about a filtering system and closing
we,
the school.
We actually helped repay for that filter. The state did at the end of last session, because the company came in and replaced it, and then we came back afterwards and got them a little bit of money to help with the sister school system.
Good.
Because of their
Good.
Their thing. So yeah, it was. I remember when it was happening at the end of last session. So.
Yes, sir.
Any other questions for this group? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks, ladies.
I know it's wise to, as a firefighter, to stay out of the smoke.
That's true. We're going to, is there anyone else who would like to speak on 3109? He's got to fix it. So we're going to close our public hearing on House Bill 3109, and we're going to open public hearing on House Bill 2618A. We'll have a short explanation of the bill, and Representative Clem, you're welcome to come up with anyone you want to bring.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2618A has no revenue impact, and a fiscal statement was issued and should be in front of you. This bill allows the city to withdraw a portion of a district that is annexed or incorporated into the city only if the city provides the service previously provided by the district.
Go right ahead. I was just looking at the fiscal impact that says that they can't figure it out what it is.
Oh, boy. Okay. Indeterminate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Brian Clem, State Representative from District 21, which is here in central and east portion of Salem and just east of Salem. And with me are some really great people that represent a special district that's here in our area, which is kind of the topic of this bill. It's a fire district in this case, Marion Rural Fire 1, Randy Frankie, who's the board chair, and Kevin Henson, who's the chief at our district. And we wanted to talk to you about House Bill 2618. And I came by your offices yesterday and left a highlighted copy of a court case with your staff. I don't know if it made it into your files. This bill, 2618, is attempting to codify this court case. And the court case involved a city here in Marion County that withdrew from Marion Fire 1 a population of people not to provide them any services or begin taking their taxes and arranging to have services provided with someone else, but withdrew them for the purposes of having another special district then attempt to annex them into their district. And no one had ever tried that in Oregon before, and it kicked off quite a fight because the old process that everyone thought was the only way to do this involved a negotiation between the two special districts that they both had to agree to. So you didn't get public wars over this, because if you didn't talk the person on the other side of the table into agreeing to this transfer of people from one district to another, it didn't happen. So you had to sweeten the pot, do whatever you had to do to get them to agree to it, and both parties had to agree. This was an effort where a third party who had literally didn't have skin in the game, weren't taking in taxes and weren't going to provide the service, sort of played referee and said, we're going to take from you and see if the voters want to join this other special district. And the voters said no, so the whole issue was moot from on the ballot anyway. Then a judge said that whole thing was illegal, you can't do that. And that's what we're trying to do, is make sure nobody else thinks that move could be pulled again, because it was spent almost $1 million of taxpayer money on legal fees to litigate what we can resolve right here in this bill. And it was frustrating for legislators, because I tried to get it addressed during the special session, but the question was out on the ballot a month later, and people felt very awkward about getting involved in an election that was coming up and that kind of thing. So we decided, let's come back now that the issue is completely resolved. Nobody's in the middle of trying to use this for anything at this point, and just codify the ruling, plug the hole, and go back to the old system that the counties and the special districts will be here to support, which is, if the two districts want to move people between each other, they need to work that out and not use these sort of what we didn't intend loopholes to create, almost like a boundary commission that we once had in Oregon that would move lines around. And that's the nature of the bill, passed out of the Land Use Committee that I chair, maybe with one no vote. and I can't recall for sure, maybe two, and then with the floor with very little dissent. And that's
we'll let you, each of you comment first, and then we'll have questions.
Thank you, Chair Roblin, honorable senators of the committee. My name is Randall Frankie. I live in Northeast Salem, part of Representative Clem's district. I think I'm on my seventh or eighth year as the board of directors for the Marion County Fire District number one, and my third year as the chair. And unfortunately, this recent unpleasantness, as we refer to it as, occurred while I was chair. I don't know what much more I can add other than underscoring what Representative Clem has described. We had had a tradition of a pretty good working relationship with our neighboring fire district, and I couldn't tell you exactly all the reasons today why all of a sudden we were presented with this option. We tried to explain to them as best we could in terms of our understanding that the intent of the law was, unless the city was going to actually provide that service themselves or contract for someone to provide that service, that wasn't the intent of the law, and that wasn't the approach that had been used historically to change districts and special districts, boundaries and special districts. So, needless to say, they saw it differently. It did go to a vote, of which we won overwhelmingly, quite candidly. And then Marion County Circuit Court judge also decided in our favor that indeed that was not the intent of the statute. And so the issue is settled for us once and for all, but it's not settled for other districts. And it is true, the two districts combined spent almost $1 million litigating this issue. That's not how the public taxpayer expects us to spending their money. And it candidly, it didn't do any district, either of us, any favors in the public's eye in terms of getting along and working together as opposed to being in a fight and spending public money.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, my name is Kevin Henson. I am the fire chief for Marion County Fire District 1. I would just echo the comments of both speakers you just heard from. My goal is that this never happens again. It's never good for two special districts to have a public battle like that. It certainly wasn't wise for us to spend that amount of money on a legal fight. That's now over and past. We're in good shape in terms of that. We just want to do our part to help make sure that doesn't happen anywhere else in Oregon. That's the primary comment I wanted to offer. With that, we'd listen to any questions you might have.
Any questions? Yes, Senator Becher.
So, if I remember right, this was Marion County Fire District and Kaiser Fire District. So if this bill was in place, describe to me how the process would take place.
So thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator Bertschinger. If this bill had been in place, what would have happened is when Kaiser Fire went to Kaiser City Council and said, hey, can you withdraw them and then we'll move in and annex them, they would have said no. If we withdraw them, we're going to have to provide the fire service to them, or we're going to have to take the taxes in and then do an IGA and arrange for you to do it. All that is allowed, but they can't just withdraw somebody, even if they're within their city limits, unless they're going to make sure they're covered under a service. Because if you think about it, you can't just withdraw someone from a fire district and then leave them with no fire service. And that wasn't Kaiser's intent. The intent was to withdraw them and for 1 second on election night have them uncovered and then immediately have the annexation take effect and they'd be covered. But the problem with that process that because the bill wasn't there, people said, well, it doesn't say that in the bill. And I had LC come to my committee last session and say, you know, is what Kaiser's doing legal? And they said, first they said no. Then they said, well, it actually doesn't say that you can't withdraw them for no purpose. It's not clear. So that's why the bill adds the word in, will provide, you know, may withdraw if they will provide. And it says will provide for the service. And it's not directly. It doesn't, you don't have to have a fire department to withdraw someone. You just got to make sure through, you know, taking in their taxes, for example, and hiring Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue to do the fire service in your area through an intergovernmental agreement, that they are going to get the fire service. But you have to have a more active role in it than just being the boundary commission. And I went to the Kaiser City Council. I said, I don't think you should do this. I think this is illegal. And they said, well, you're showing up a little late. I mean, it was the last night. I said, well, I'm sorry. I just didn't know about it. I said, I don't think this is going to be stand up in court. And they said, well, we don't want any part of this. We got asked to do this. Our lawyers are telling us it's a theoretical possibility, and we want to let our voters decide. So in the future, they would get told by their legal counsel, no, don't put it on the ballot. You can't do it. Make the two special districts have to use the normal kind of double majority agreement where they, you know, the one chief would go to this chief and say, hey, look, I'll split the property taxes. I'll take them in. You don't have to come as much anymore. And they would negotiate over something like that. And we'd never hear about it. It wouldn't be in the newspapers.
Follow up?
Yes, follow up.
Would the fire district's boundary then be amended? Because doesn't that have to be, to amend the boundary of the fire district, that would have to go to a vote of the people within the fire district, correct?
Chair Roblin, Senator Bertschiger, so the withdrawal from Fire District 1 left them, as I mentioned, without a fire district for a moment. Then the annexation would have moved them into the other one. And what I don't know is your process for if that in itself amended the boundary, or then do you have to go through some other process to formally amend the boundary? We do have an answer in our next panel if Kevin doesn't know from their attorney.
There was a theoretical, it all happens at the exact same moment, conversation on their side. That was not our position, but that was their position. We don't think that was clear because we don't think they can function as a land use committee.
It was an interesting legal theory, to say the least. And
I guess my only question is, had now that this whole process is over, had the voters chosen to go with the other fire district and the judge would have come back and said it was an illegal process, their vote would have been overturned as well, obviously, because and that's only in Marion County right now, because they're the only circuit that's done it, right?
Chair Roblin, that's correct. And as this was before City Council, that was our request, was stop this, because the exact scenario that you described, we predicted, and in fact is what played out, except we won, at the vote as well.
Right, yeah.
And, Mr. Chair, Kevin got some emails from other fire districts around the state saying, you know, now a few other cities are starting to get interested in this. Down in Lane County, there was a potential, you know, hey, can you withdraw from my Junction City, maybe two different fire districts. Can you withdraw and then maybe we could move in? And that's why we don't want to just leave this resolved in our case and that's it. And then you know, one of you end up with this in your area. Because it's not fun to have two very popular fire districts and fire chiefs in, you know, in again at odds with each other when we all want to just try and provide the service community. They want to provide the service, and it's helpful to have only those two at the table figuring out what works in terms of either whatever, shared mutual agreements, merger and consolidations, whatever has to happen to make the situation work best for the residents. It's best to leave them to work it out and not have other people who aren't affected playing, really getting involved, ourselves included, or cities for that matter, in my view.
Okay. Great. Any other questions? Thank you very
and
much.
If you have more legal questions that come up, Chris Crean, who is the fire district's attorney, he's also a municipal attorney for Happy Valley. He helped draft this. He litigated this case for the fire district. He's a former legislative counsel, and he'll come up as well if you get into anything else that you're interested in. And we'll stick around for a while, too, if it's necessary.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So we will invite Chris Crean and Mark Landauer to come on up.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity to speak to you today. My name is Chris Crane. I'm an attorney with the firm of Perry Elsner Hammond in Portland. I have, Representative Clem said, I litigated this case on behalf of the fire district. In the past, I also worked for Miller Nash in Multnomah County and began my legal career here with Legislative Council, where I worked for 6 years. And I'll just reiterate what you already know. You have a very fine staff of lawyers down the hall. The first thing I'd like to do is to underscore is the relative unimportance of this bill. We tried to, all the judge did in Marion County, Judge Day, all he did was agree with us that the way we were reading the statute is the way that it had always been read and applied by cities and special districts around the state. What Kaiser was doing was taking a unique spin on the statute and trying to address a local, frankly, political situation and moving boundaries around between fire districts to benefit this one and to the detriment of that one. And we said, you can't do it. I know the statute doesn't say that you can't do it, but you can't. That's not what the statute's for. And if you read it in context, if you look at the legislative history, it's really pretty clear that that's not what the statute's for. And they said, well, it doesn't say that. Well, and as Chair Roland, as you pointed out, it only applies now in Marion County, and it did cost the taxpayers a heck of a lot of money to reach the conclusion that the statute says what everybody always thought it said. And what we would like to do, it wasn't appealed, so it's not going to the Court of Appeals. The decision there only applies in Marion County. What this bill would do is clarify, yes, in fact, the statute says what we all thought it meant. A city can withdraw territory from a special district if the city provides the service. If Kaiser had a fire department, every time they annexed new territory, they would withdraw it from the rural fire district. Another point I want to mention, because I also represent a lot of cities, I'm really not out to limit city authority here. All we're trying to do is clarify, Kaiser thought the statute gave them the authority that nobody else thought they did. So I don't think we're limiting city authority here from what it was before. But a lot of cities do provide services via contract. Happy Valley, again, is a client of mine, and they contract with Clackamas County Sheriff's Office. But Happy Valley provides for police protection in through their permanent rate. They're collecting property tax revenue and using that for police services within the city of Happy Valley. They don't do it directly. They do it by contract, but whether you fix your house or you pay for somebody else to fix your house, you're the one getting your house fixed. Same analysis applies here. The statute is not intended to be read to conclude that cities have to provide a service directly. As long as you're collecting the revenue through, you know, property tax levies, the permanent rate, whatever, and paying for it, it's not a legal difference whether you do it directly or indirectly. A couple of things that I've heard opponents, particularly cities, say about the bill is that the cities believe they should have the authority to determine services within their boundaries. Well, if that's true, there's a simple answer. Start a fire department. The problem is, of course, that permanent rates are fixed as a result of Measure 5, and cities and fire departments are very expensive, so that's unlikely to happen. But that, you know, you have to live with the decisions you make. The city of Kaiser, for example, was formed largely for the purpose of keeping tax rates low. And so the way you do that is don't provide a whole lot of services. And with respect to fire services, they said, we're not going to do it. We're going to rely on the fire services that were there already. Kaiser Fire District was there. Marion County Fire District was there. And the city got plopped on top of it. And they just relied on the fire districts. You can't then now come in as some kind of super boundary commission and start tinkering with other local government's boundaries just because you have some local political preference for one over the other. You've got each one of these local governments are just that, a local government. They have boundaries, they have assets, they have employees, they have debts and liabilities, and you can't simply start acting as a super boundary commission. And that's one of the points we made to Judge Day. He agreed with us, and all we're asking is for a bill that clarifies what everybody always thought to be the case. And at this point, it will apply statewide, and hopefully we won't have this kind of dispute then in the future.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. My name is Mark Landauer. I'm here on behalf of the Special Districts Association of Oregon. The Special Districts Association represents approximately 950 single-service local governments across the state of Oregon, providing a variety of different services, including water, sanitary, libraries, fire, parks and rec, just a host of different services. And we're very much in support of House Bill 2618. Some fundamental questions that this bill raises. Should taxpayers of a special district have their property removed from the district of their choice by a city when the city itself does not provide the service? Should a city have the authority to remove territory from one special district and transfer it to another special district without the support of the affected property owners? Or should a district that is having its territory removed by a third party be given no opportunity to have a say in that change? Our association believes the answers are no, no, and no, and that's why we're supportive of this measure. Much of what I would have said has been said already. I do want to mention just a couple of points here. In the case of the Kaiser, the city of Kaiser withdrawing territory from Marion County Fire District Number 1, I don't know if much thought had been given by the city to what would have happened had that withdrawal taken place. What would have happened to the stranded people within Marion County, and whether Marion County Fire District would have been able to survive from the loss of territory that was being withdrawn. There is a real possibility under these circumstances that the remaining citizens within that territory that was withdrawn from may not be able to function as a local government anymore, thereby leaving the impossibility of that service being provided again. The other issue, of course, is that because this was, again, just a circuit court decision that was not appealed, it only applies in Marion County. And therefore, of course, the possibility of this happening in 35 other counties in this state is very much a real prospect. And as a result, we believe that this is a bill that makes a great deal of sense. It's been commonly understood since the statute was put in place, I believe, in 1949. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Any questions?
Just a quick
one. Yes, Senator Barrett Sugar.
So am I wrong in saying that the change of boundary of a special taxing district has to have the approval of that governing body of that taxing district? Is that correct?
Chair Roblin, Senator Birchger, that's correct, and I'm sorry I forgot to follow up. You asked that same question of the prior panel. There is a series of statute called the Special District Boundary Procedures Act. It's in ORS Chapter 198, and it sets out a process for modifying special district boundaries and removing cities from the picture for a moment. If two special districts want to adjust their boundaries, both believe that it's in their interest, the Stowe statutes do provide a process for that to occur.
That's what I thought. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. No other questions. Thank you both.
Thank you.
And Aaron Doyle.
Good afternoon, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. For the record, Aaron Doyle with the League of Oregon Cities. The League is opposed to this particular bill, as we believe it shortchanges the necessary discussion on the role of cities in determining how services are provided within the city boundaries. We've heard the history of this bill and the situation that came out of Kaiser. So if the law is what this bill proposes to add to it is that the court found is already in the law. So this bill might not be necessary. We understand that it's only a circuit court decision and therefore only applicable in the county in which the circuit court presides. However, it's unlikely that another city will want to spend any money litigating what has clearly been established by a court to be the law in a very short and sweet decision. But there is still the question of whether or not cities have the skin in the game when services are provided to its citizens. And while special districts are the taxing authorities for the special district's services, cities do have a skin in the game, particularly when it comes to the example of Kaiser Fire and Marion County Rural Fire. There are fire codes that result from being serviced by a fire marshal and a fire district. And if within the city boundaries there are two different fire codes, that's two different sets of building codes. There are water pressures that might result that are different from the different fire plug types. And that's something that cities have to address within their budgets and how they're dealing with the different fire marshals with different standards for fire code decisions. In addition, we don't have the ability to change our taxing base, our base tax levels to decide when we need to just start providing the services ourselves. We don't have that flexibility that's necessary to just start a fire department. So we should have a voice in the conversation when it comes to how services are provided by special districts within the cities. Maybe not the city gets to make the decision and be the final arbiter of the decision, but there should be a moment in that policy discussion when we do an annexation, when we add an area that's been serviced by one special district that hasn't been serviced by, that has is not the special district servicing the rest of the city. We should have a moment and an opportunity to reflect on what changes that's going to require of the city to make, what compromises we're going to have to deal with as far as what changes to building codes, what changes to inspections, all changes to any sort of public safety considerations, sewer, water lines, all of that. We should be able to have a moment where we can reflect on that and say, we need this boundary to be changed, but maybe we should do it in a way that is smarter than the heavy-handed way that Kaiser did it. This bill would prevent us from having that policy conversation here about how we can address those situations and make informed decisions that have the buy-in of all parties. And I believe that for that reason, 2618 just, A, is not necessary because no one else is going to try this. They all wanted to see what Kaiser's result was going to be. Kaiser's result was not favorable to the cities, and therefore they're not going to try now. And B, if we're going to have a real policy discussion, we do have a skin in the game as a city, and therefore we should there should be some other way of determining how special district boundaries get moved, and this is not is this limitation is too much. I'm happy to answer any questions.
I have a couple questions. One, if this is the law, the way it is, then you don't have this, they're not going to get the skin in the game anyway, so you're going to still have to go through the other process. But the bigger one to me was the portion of Marion County Rural Fire Department, was that always a part of Kaiser?
Chair Roblin, I believe that As was stated earlier, Kaiser was placed down onto where, I believe they were where Kaiser Rural was, and then as they expanded, they went into Marion County Fire, but I'm not 100% certain. I don't go back that far.
So either way, I mean, so when it first happened, so that's, Kaiser's been around for a couple of years.
Since the 80s.
Since the 80s. And
but after the fire district. The fire district was here before Kaiser.
Right, that's what I'm saying. But yeah. I'm saying, but since the 1980s, it's worked the way it was, and there wasn't any conversations about this before, and all of a sudden they just do it now? Or if they expanded into the area, then they knew what they were expanding into. So I don't understand why they didn't have, I mean, they could have chosen if they were outside of it, they could have said, oh, we won't annex that area because we don't like their fire hydrants. I mean, they didn't have to take them in.
Chair Roblin, you're correct. They don't have to take anyone in through the annexation process. However, there are expectations as areas urbanize that cities do reach out and annex those territories in. We have requirements about, you know, like all of the land use goals and the land use process is there for that annexation. And I don't know why Kaiser chose at that moment to say, let's try it this way. I can't speak for Kaiser and Kaiser's decision-making.
Right.
It may be that they had, for the first time, expanded into Marion County, but I'm not certain about that. I'm not trying to say that that is the truth. No. But at the moment when it does become apparent to a city, there should be a mechanism besides either we take on a whole new responsibility of providing fire, and we have to let the special districts work it out. And when they can't, in particular, maybe cities should have a role at that moment.
I'm just saying, yes. Senator Perzanski.
Oh,
Senator Bashir.
Yeah, I'll come up.
So I kind of go down the same way you're talking. The kind of way I look at it is you have a, you know, Kaiser Fire Protection covers the city of Kaiser. Kaiser expands into Marion. Wouldn't Kaiser say, okay, Marion, this is the area you protect, but we have ordinances now that some of your district is in the city. These are the ordinances. You have to bring your standards up to this level. Did that happen?
Chair Roblin, Senator Bartschinger, I'm not certain how those conversations took place, but my understanding is that as they are independent special districts, they set their own standards and codes.
Yeah. We'll have him come up, so he's just, he might be able to answer that question. Yeah.
Thank you, Chair Roble, members of the committee. This is Chris Crane again. The equipment standards are state standards set by the state fire marshal, and every time as equipment is upgraded and it becomes obsolete or pipes and hydrants are replaced, there may be new standards. They have to be brought in line with the new standards. It's very much like the state building code. It's a mini-maxi code, and every fire district and city fire department across state has to ultimately come into compliance with those standards. And that's true, frankly, as any city, not just Kaiser. If it annexes territory, let's say the city has a fire department, it may have different equipment, and when it annexes new territory, it's going to have to deal with the equipment in that territory they just annexed. So that's something that every city that has a fire department faces every time they annex new territory. That's not a new or unique problem.
And it would have, if they had certain requirements for the city that were different from the rural department where the fire district would have to take on that responsibility.
If the city doesn't have a fire department,
right.
They would not, I can't imagine they would have ordinances that would direct the fire department what equipment they have, a fire district what equipment they would have to have. But again, as I say, the equipment standards are set statewide by the state fire marshal. Okay. So it's not the subject of local ordinances typically.
Fire code the same way? I mean, with respect
to
building codes?
That's correct.
Okay.
Senator. Thank you. So I guess for the city or for the league, I thought I heard you say that if this bill is enacted, somehow this is going to impact your ability to be involved in other type of annexation issues. Could you please elaborate as to what you...
Oh, Chair Roblin, Senator Brzezinski, I did not mean to state that this would affect how we go through annexation processes. It's a different set of statutes. And this bill, it wouldn't have any effect on how we annex. It would just, this deals with the withdrawal from territory from a special district alone.
Okay, I understand that. But in your presentation, I thought you made some inference that the city or a city may need to be or should be at the table to participate, and somehow this was going to preempt the ability for a city to be involved with the special districts and maybe trying to coordinate a reorganization, a redrawing of jurisdiction.
Oh, Chair Roblin, Senator Brzezinski, I'm saying that the league would support a policy where we did have a chair at that table, and as far as how we when we did annex someone and ran into this problem of two special districts and we wanted to have continuous and the same levels of service and the same type of service and the same service provider throughout the city, we would want a seat at that table. And that's the policy that we think we should be putting forward at this time instead of this bill. Does that clarify?
Sure. Chris, if you could maybe enlighten me at least as to this perspective from what Senator Brooksugar asked, and what I understand is that normally the way this would have occurred is the two special districts would have gotten together and say, hey, we got some overlap here, or maybe this is on the edge of our district. We know that you're more in, let's say, quicker response, whatever it may be for the reasons that they would sit down and look at the boundary change and work through that process.
Chair Roblin, Senator Brzezinski, that's correct. And the specific statute is 198.720, subsection 2, and it says a special district cannot provide service in another special district that is organized under the same organic act, so two fire districts, if the other district is already providing the service, unless it's approved by both governing bodies. So both special districts would have to agree. And, that's how negotiations occur. There's some arm twisting. You give me this, we'll give you that. If both districts believed it was in their interest, the statutes provide a process to allow that to occur.
All right. And if I can follow up.
Yes.
And if for some reason they weren't able to reach some type of agreement, I would assume that the affected individuals, which in that special district that they're being served with, could potentially do some type of petition to try to go through another process. What I'm trying to get at is there are multiple ways this could be done, and what I'm still trying to figure out is how this bill is going to impact anyone in the future, except give clarity that what you can't do or what is required to be done.
Senator Roblin, or Chair Roblin, Senator Persansky, that's exactly right. And it's true of annexation. There is a process in the Special District Boundary Procedures Act that allows a property owner to petition into one district and out of another. And so that opportunity is there. But your larger point is there are multiple ways to amend service district boundaries, just like there's about four different ways cities can annex territory, consent annexations, island annexations. So there's a bunch of different ways these things occur. And you're exactly right. This bill doesn't change any of that except clarify that when a city is annexing new territory, or if a new city is incorporated, it can withdraw the territory from the affected special district if the city is going to be providing the service. And that makes perfect sense to me, and it makes perfect sense to everyone who's done this before. With respect to the question of the city having a seat at the table, they do already. That's how the process occurs. We currently have litigating an annexation appeal at the Land Use Board of Appeals, and one of the questions is, should the city have withdrawn the territory from the county's Special Urban Road District, because when cities approve their annexation ordinances, they have exactly this discussion. What effect is it going to have? What special districts cover that territory currently? Which ones do we withdraw from? Which ones don't we withdraw from? They already have that exact policy discussion occurs today, and this bill would not change any of that. Cities do have a seat at the table. They're a very large voice in that discussion. And so I would like to, again, reiterate your point that this bill doesn't change anything substantively.
One last question, if I can. And, Chris, I heard Representative Clem testify, and I'm not sure if I heard him correctly. If the city of Kaiser actually wanted to provide fire service, they would actually have the obligation of creating a fire department that would be part of the city, and then they would be able to take the steps of somehow taking over what is within their city limits.
Chair Roblin, Senator Persansky, that's correct, almost. They wouldn't necessarily have to create a department, but they'd have to create room for it in their general fund and start paying for fire service, whether they contracted with one of the districts or hired their own employees. If they took the responsibility for providing fire service, then they could withdraw it from an affected special district. What we see, a little bit of an aside, what we see is actually in the evolution of city services is moving in the opposite direction. Because of the limits of Measure 5 and 50, cities can't increase their general funds to keep up with expenditures. And so what they're doing is sloughing off these services. City of Beaverton got out of the fire protection business and annexed themselves into TVWD, and their general fund revenue that had been going to fire service was then available for other things. Multnomah County just created a library district with its own taxing authority. So now they have more money in the general fund that had been going. So what we see, the evolution is actually moving the other way because of our taxing structure. That's obviously a much larger discussion than this one.
Thank you.
Any other? Yes, Senator.
Thank you. I was interested in your comment that of not wanting to take away a potential tool that the cities might have to help reach agreements on some of these things. But it's my understanding that the bill doesn't go any further than what the court has said existing law is. Is there something else in the bill that you feel is putting more of a burden on the cities than existed before the court decision?
Chair Roblin, Senator Burdick, no, we don't think it's putting an additional burden, but we are concerned that we don't think the bill is necessary because the court has already found that this is the law. So we can't do anything new, or we can't do less than we could now, according to the court. But we think the policy discussion should be broader about creating those tools and about figuring out ways that local governments work together, or when local governments change their district or the city boundaries and those areas are getting serviced, we think that there should be a tool for kicking off that process that the cities should have in their toolbox that they don't have. And this bill, we think, just is an additional set of words that doesn't change the meaning of the statute, but we don't think it's necessarily the right policy in general.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you very much. Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to speak to House Bill 2618A? Yes, here we go.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, For the record, Mike Eliason with the Association of Oregon Counties. I will be brief. You've heard a lot of detailed testimony. Simply want to put on the record, I've turned in a letter, but I'll put on the record that the Association of Oregon Counties has considered this bill, and we do support it, mainly because we consider this an affirmation of our membership's reading of the statute for as long as we can remember. There are tools available, actually, to have these sort of broader discussions in the form of urban service agreements, which have been on the books for a number of years. So we simply see this bill as a confirmation of what we assumed existing law already said. Thanks.
Thank you. Any questions? Okay, we're going to close our public hearing on House Bill 2618A. We might as well open a work session on 2618A. Senator Bearsugar.
Chair Roblin, I move the A and Gross version of House Bill 2618 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. I did that without my glasses.
Okay. Good job.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
Senator Bearsugar moves the A and Gross version of House Bill 2618 to the floor. A, 2618 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none. Is there any opposition? Seeing none. It is passed. Senator Pinesky, want to raise the bill?
I'll be glad to. Thank you.
And just a note before I close this work session. I have had a conversation with Senator Pozanski and others about the possibility of our committee working on legislation and then looking at all of the stuff that we have at the end of this term after we get done with the other business on annexation and all this kind of stuff, because we recognize, and I know Senator Clem, also Representative Clem, hey, almost there. I'll talk Courtney. Representative Clem has also taken this up as a big issue, and I think that, you know, from my perspective, Senate Bill 100 kind of stopped before it finished the work with respect to urban growth boundaries and all that kind of stuff and this whole thing, and it's become this hodgepodge of so many different things. It would be nice to maybe get some order out of that, a little bit of chaos that I see there. So we'll have a conversation. I don't know that it'll lead to much, but would love to do that. So now I'll close the work session on House Bill 2618A and open a public hearing on House Bill 2618A.
Is 15. It
15. All right, 2615A. And so with that, we'll have a short explanation. And while we're doing that, we will bring up Roger Byard, Jim James, and Jim Dennison.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2615A has a minimal revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact on the proposed A3 amendment. This bill modifies the statutes governing harvest and transport of special forest products. It replaces mushroom with fungi in the definition of special forest product, and then it removes the exemption from permit requirements for certain activities on private lands. It effective on July 1st, 2014, it then makes the definition of special forest product in statute more general and provides for the State Board of Forestry to define those in rule. The proposed A3 amendment corrects a reference when the bill was modified, just pointing to the correct subsections of the measure.
With that, whoever wants.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Roger Beyer here representing Oregon Small Woodlands Association. Thank you for hearing House Bill 2615, and Raquel pretty much just gave my testimony. So you have the overview of the bill. We have people here to talk about it. I would just point out that I submitted in OLA, so hopefully you have it in front of you, the testimony that was presented by Sheriff Davey at the House committee, who wasn't able to be here today. There are a series of pictures. I've got a hard copy here. They are some pictures of some truffles and a picture of the damage that can be done if truffles are raked inappropriately. This is actually a case that Officer Davey attempted to prosecute and was not able to because the DA wasn't willing to or was unable to prosecute successfully on trespassing charges on private land, and because truffles were not listed as a special forest product, they weren't able to process under the transporting of special forest products. So that's what the bill does. The attempt is by moving this to a generic list and allow the Board of Forestry to refine it as needed. There is always going to be another truffle. We don't know what the next truffle is going to be, but it's the legislature has always in the past been 2 years at least behind what people are taking from our forests. And this way would allow them to do it by rule because it would make basically all things on the forest that aren't commercial forest products, special forest products, and therefore they would be illegal to be transported then. So with that, I'd be happy to answer questions and turn it over to Jim James and Mr. Dennison, who's actually had the case where they weren't successfully able to prosecute. So thank you.
Thank you.
Again, Chairman Roblin and members of the committee, my name is Jim James. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Small Wooden Association, and it's a pleasure to be here today, and thank you for hearing my testimony. House Bill 2615 fixes a problem, as Roger describes, that allows theft of a very valuable, what we believe should be a secondary forest product, truffles. A gallon of truffles can be worth more than $1,000. And theft on private forest land has become a huge issue. Passing House Bill 2615 with its amendments will fix the problem that was created by the popularity of truffles. And again, I did provide some written testimony. I don't know that it's necessary for me to elaborate my written testimony on this issue, but we do believe this is a very important issue to family forest owners. And we would urge you support of House Bill 2615. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chairman Roblin and committee members, my name is James Dennison. My wife and I live in Eddyville, Oregon. I'm sure you know where Eddyville is. That's the center of Oregon, if anybody didn't know. We were the victims of this truffle trespass. And I'm not too sure how many people know what a truffle is. Everybody thinks it might be a mushroom growing above ground. It is not. It's a fungi that grows below the surface of the ground and generally attached to the roots of a tree. And pictures I've seen just recently on television in Portland area were taken within a mile of our property in Lincoln County. I don't want to elaborate on my written statement because I am a professional forester. I have been for over 60 years, a land surveyor. I have managed thousands of acres of land for most of that time in the Central Oregon coast from Lincoln County, Lane County, and Tillamook County. The special forest products that are grown in our county are special products. And evidently, a lot of foresters, a lot of landowners don't realize they have these products on their lands. And they're subject to theft, whether it's cascara bark, or whether it's a fern, or whether it's a truffle growing beneath the surface of the ground, or a mushroom growing above. All these things have value that most landowners don't know. And with the Small Woodland Association, I was president of that organization back in the 1990s. We have owners that are absentee owners, and most of them my age, which is getting bad. When you finally succeed in reaching the 80th birthday, you think you're happy, and I'm going to turn 85 this year. I'd like to see some protection for small woodland owners. And with the timberlands being owned by large companies now that were not a timber owning or producing other than the sell timber, they're absentee owners too. A lot of those owners in the back east and have consultants working for them out here, but trying to manage thousands and thousands of acres of land, you can't keep up with the theft that goes on these lands. And so I hope you appreciate the pictures that were taken on our property. It shows the damage that was done. As a forester, I'm concerned the damage may exceed the value of the tree that a truffle has been attached to the roots of. And I think that research hasn't really told us yet what that damage is. We learned a lot years ago about compaction. This is the opposite of compaction because they take all the soil and rake it off, and and strip these things off of the roots of the trees. And I'm not too sure, but what maybe a $1,000 tree might be destroyed for somebody taking $250 worth of truffles. The pictures you're going to see there, though, represent $250 the sheriff's department got from a chef in Newport trying to get rid of these things before they were not any good anymore. And reading a little bit of French literature, you find out the truffles are worth upwards of $1,000 to $1,500 a pound in the markets in major cities where chefs appreciate them. If there's any questions, I'd be glad to ask them. Thank you for the time.
Thank you. Senator Pruszynski, and you can push that microphone a little ways away from me. You don't have to be that close. Push it away. Push. You can push the microphone away. It picks
Sorry,
up.
Sorry, I can't hear, so I try to get it That's good. A little closer.
Yep.
Well, Mr. Dennison, thank you for being here and telling your story. I had a couple of questions for you. First, from what Roger Byer said, it sounded like maybe they weren't successful in prosecuting on criminal trespass.
Right.
And was that because the property wasn't noticed, that they didn't have notice that they can't come on the property?
We had notices on the property, but probably not enough to satisfy state requirements, ORSs. We're doing better on that.
All right. Well, that's good. I'm sorry to hear that, because if they had noticed, they shouldn't be there. They shouldn't have been there, and they should have been successfully prosecuted. So the truffles, I'm curious, do you know the ones that they took from your property, if they're black or white?
They're black.
Very good. And so have you heard about truffle dogs?
Well, I have. We've had two truffle excursions on our property, my adjoining neighbor and myself, learning a little bit about truffles. We had a tour about 10 years ago. It was one of the first time I'd ever heard that there was a truffle even in Oregon. And I thought that I should start reading up a little bit on it. Which we did, and we've had two different excursions on our properties there in Lincoln County, and the dogs do an excellent job. You have in Lane County a ex-deputy sheriff there, a lady that has trains dogs.
Yes, Chris.
And she was on our last tour, and it's really interesting to watch a dog work.
Yep. And I actually know her. I'm a prosecutor, and she actually was with the sheriff's office at that time. Also know her in her new life of training dogs, and Charlie LaFerriere is a truffler who's from Lane County. And I was going to say, if you hadn't met him, it would be nice getting you together, because he is really promoting the Oregon truffle as something that we as a state should really be promoting, because it is a very unique fungi that actually has a lot of value, and for the property owners and for those who love to eat them.
We have her name, and she's going to be a tour of ours is coming here.
Oh, great. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Any other questions for this group? Thank you both.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next, we'll have Mike Deichsel and Joe Rollator.
Yeah, well,
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Joe Rollator. I represent a small group of commercial wild mushroom and truffle harvesters. And you'll remember I brought you a bill, Senate Bill 578, earlier in this year about the commercial harvesters. And if I was being kind to myself, I'd say that bill's a little bit ahead of its time. If I was being very critical, I'd say it was ill thought out. 2615A, however, I think is really a good bill. It protects a private property landowner who may have resources that he doesn't even know about that could be very valuable. And my neighbors and myself are in this class, actually. We are trying to get Chris to come down and do a survey for us to tell us where it is on our property. And so this bill makes it very clear that somebody can't come on property and harvest this very potentially valuable resource without permission of the landowner. I think it's also a good bill because it makes it possible for the Board of Forestry to put new products on special forest products. So as small woodlot owners, we find that stuff all of a sudden becomes valuable. Nobody's even interested in you anymore, but they were really interested in
for a while.
Wow, they're cutting down my shrubs. So yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, for the record, Mike Dyksel, Director of Forest Protection for the Oregon Forest Industries Council here in Salem. I passed out on behalf of Longview Timber their testimony. They could not be here today. I just want to thank them. OFIC and a number of our member companies feel exactly the same way of what you see for Longview Timber's statement there. We do encourage and enjoy the opportunity for the public to come out and recreate on our property, but Mr. Rollator's point too, anytime you remove something of private property, you'd like to have a process whereby approval is given or at least awareness. And really just follow Roger Byers' testimony, said it all as far as the process. And I too would thank Lincoln County Sheriff's Deputy Gary Davey when he brought this to my attention 2 years ago that it was an issue, and it just turned out to be the right time thanks to Joe and the committee's work of morphing it into what you see today. So OFIC is in support of the A and Gross version of 2615 with the -3 amendments. And if I could, just for a second, on Senator Brzezinski's comment a little bit earlier about the trespass part and the signage issue, that definition of enclosed land, I don't want to take you too far down a different path, but I think just out on the radar screen of the definition of enclosed land may work very well for someone who owns a corner lot or 5 or 10 acres, but when you start thinking about the size of our membership owner lands, the ability to sign every certain distance and at every crossing becomes extremely problematic, as well as the maintenance of those signs, being able to get around and see those. So at some time in the future, that's been one of those other things in the back of my mind of trying to provide a designation or distinction for the types of ownership patterns that are out there.
Yeah. Thank you. Any questions for this group? Thank you both. Is there anyone else that would like to talk? Give us testimony on House Bill 2615A. You're okay. Okay. So we are going to close the public hearing on 2615A, and we'll open a work session on 2615A. Senator Bearsugar.
Okay. Chair Roblin, I move to adopt the -3 amendment dated 5213.
Senator Bearsugar moves to adopt the -A3 amendments dated 5213. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? They are adopted. Senator Bearsugar.
Chair Roblin, I move the A and Gross version of HB 2615 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Bearsugar moves the A and Gross version of House Bill 2615 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? Seeing none, it is moved to the Oregon State Senate floor. Anybody want to carry it? Senator Close can carry this up. With that, we're going to open a work session on House Bill 30. I'll close the work session on House Bill 2618A. We'll open a work session on House Bill 3109A. Senator Bearsugar.
Chair Roblin, I move the A and Gross version of House Bill 3109 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Bearsugar moves the A and Gross version of House Bill 3109 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? Seeing none, so ordered. And anybody wants to carry this bill, or I will. I will carry it. I'll do it. With that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 3109A. And anything else? I do want to reiterate the fact that I am looking real hard, and we'll talk to individual members if you want. The whole idea of annexation and the bills like we had today, we get a lot of this stuff, and it comes to us because in bits and pieces, and it might be time to have a real conversation about it. So we'll see what we can do. Put our able legislative staff.
Quite a task.
It is a big task. So with that, we're going to adjourn our Committee on Rural Communities and Economic Development. Thank you.